You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Sacramento, California is home for Banjo Bones, where he has released 5 previous albums and currently number 6, just released on October 31st, entitled Lucifer's Hands. It's true to his tagline, The Dark Side of Americana. It's edgy and mysterious, and it's the subject for this edition of Americana Music Profiles, as Banjo Bones and I talk about his career and his latest release. Hello, Banjo. Welcome to the podcast today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Good to connect again. It's been a little while. We've done this before, but I think it's probably 2 years, looks like.
Yep. That's about right.
And normally 2 years is a long time, but after this year, it feels like it could be 10 years.
right, with the way
things have changed and as crazy as it's gotten. So for folks that want to go back and check out our previous conversation, they can go to the website and just search Banjo Bones, and it'll take them back about 18 months, I think, and they can check that out. But just in case, give us just a brief background on yourself. And you've been in Sacramento, I think, 8 years. Is that right?
Well, actually, yeah, I was just looking at my bio this morning. It says 8 years, but it's actually been closer to 10. I moved here at the very tail end of 2010, beginning of 2011. So it's 9, pushing 10.
Yeah, all right.
It's my home base now.
Yeah, okay.
I'm originally from Puerto Rico, but I've lived in and out of Puerto Rico all my life. And I was calculating the other day that more than half my life I spent away from Puerto Rico, and I'm 55, so that's a gigantic portion.
Yeah.
And especially of my adult life. So my adult life, I've been out of Puerto Rico for the most part. Not necessarily in the States, although I spent a significant amount of time in the United States. I lived in Japan and in other places as well. It's been an enriching experience as far as music is concerned, because sure. I'm very influenced by everywhere I've lived.
And give us a kind of remind us how this whole musical journey started for you in the beginning.
So yeah, as with everybody that's a musician, or pretty much everybody that's a musician, I started off in a cover band in high school. I was fortunate enough to hook up with these guys who were a lot older than me. I was 14 or 15 at the time, and they were all way past 25. The oldest was 33. And they were really experienced.
Wow.
In fact, one of them was a semi-celebrity in Costa Rica.
Uh-huh.
That was a very fortunate experience for me, because I got to learn a lot from them on how to behave, how to conduct myself professionally as a musician. And at 15, that's just a golden lesson to learn, especially
sure.
from somebody who's not necessarily teaching you. They're just showing you by example. So that was really cool. I fast forward from that, and I actually, at the tail end of high school, when I was a senior in high school, I started my first originals band. Because writing, I'm an okay guitarist and a very marginal singer, but songwriting is the one thing I'm very proud of. It's the one thing that I think I do well.
Yeah.
So it was something I was interested in from very early. It was a 3-piece heavy metalish band. It was funny. I look back and it was terrible, but it was a great experience. It was a learning experience
yeah.
as well. And then my first real professional, serious band where we were trying to make it, whatever make it meant at that time, was in the early 90s. And it was a post-punk band called Samsara, and we did a lot of touring. We were together for about 3 years, and it eventually imploded. I was the oldest guy in the band. I was 26, and the other guys were like 19 and 20, and they just didn't have the maturity to be able to deal with how hard it really is to be on the road all the time.
Right.
So that imploded eventually. And then because of that experience, I kind of walked away from music for a while. I was so devastated. It coincided with a divorce as well. So kind of my life just kind of fell apart all at once. And I walked away from music. I literally sold all my gear except the one acoustic guitar that I kept in a closet. And then when I got married to my present wife in 2000, she's a music fan, and she knew I was a musician at one point, and she started egging me on to get back into it. And slowly but surely, I did get into it. Not only did I get into it, but I, you know, now I've gotten more serious than ever with music. And that's where Banjo Bones came from. It was a combination of a realization and a new interest, because we talked a little bit about this last time, but I discovered bluegrass by accident.
Right, I remember that. Yeah,
yeah, and I was fascinated by it, and that influenced a lot of what I did, especially at the very beginning of Banjo Bones. But I didn't really want to box myself into a genre, and I strategically chose Americana as my genre, because I think of all the genres, I think Americana is the most flexible and forgiving.
It incorporates
so many things, right, so many different things. So that was my primary reason for doing that. And five albums later, and about 8 years later, here I am with Banjo Bones.
Yeah, and we're reconnecting on what I believe will be your sixth, right? Is that the
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and Lucifer's Hand, that's a kind of a interesting title. How did you choose that? Where does that point?
Well, let me give you some background. I went to Catholic school when I was from fourth to ninth grade. I went to Catholic school.
Okay.
And I am not a religious person, certainly not a dogma-oriented. But of course, I was forced to take religion in all my years there and whatever. And so it's always been a very present philosophical question in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Not just about whether there's a God or not, but how we conduct ourselves and why we conduct ourselves the way we do. And one thing that I always found very interesting was that I thought it was a bit of a cop-out to blame everything we do on the devil. You need to be looking inside and figure out why the hell you're saying the things you're saying, doing the things you're doing. You know, that's on you. I'm sorry. I think it's a cop out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what triggered this. And what I did is I put together a collection of songs that either dealt directly with that question or indirectly. You know, references to the fear of going to hell and. You know, I kind of resent anything that's fear-based as a persuasion. So that to me is, I've never grown out of my punk rock roots. I just resist all of that stuff.
did you sit down with this theme in mind? And because you spoke a few minutes ago about how the songwriting is really kind of the thing for you. Are these songs that you've kind of kept in a folder and they all seem to have a theme, or did you intentionally write with this theme in mind?
No, that's a great question, Greg. It's actually a combination. So as I mentioned right before we got into this, I'm up at 5:30 every morning, and I block the first 2 hours of my day to write. Whether I got something or not, I write.
Write
every day.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it is crap and ends up in the cutting floor, and some of it is good. But what I end up with is a database of lyrics and songs, rough ideas for songs.
Yeah.
And then when I get this feeling that, okay, I got an album in me somewhere and I have something I want to say, I look through my database and see what songs are associated with that, and then polish them up, finish them up, etc. But it also triggers new writing. So I would say about 25% of songs that come from the database and 75% of the songs on any given release are new songs that I wrote for that particular release.
Okay.
And that's the case here as well.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the title song, Lucifer's Hand, was written for this album. That didn't come out of the database. That was kind of the first song I actually wrote. I said, I think I got something here. Let me see where I can take this.
And what kind of time frame are you working with from the time that you feel like this is the direction this album goes until you feel like you have a finished collection of music to get to the studio with?
Because I'm writing all the time, the writing doesn't take as long as you might think, because a lot of it is written or the ideas are pretty fleshed out and developed already. So it's a matter of polishing them. if that wasn't the case, it would be a lot longer. But typically, anywhere between 6 and 8 months to put an album together, between the writing, the tracking, the mixing, the mastering, production, the whole works.
And are you, you mentioned that you also do some studio production work. Were you able to do all of that for this record, or do you bring in outside help with this?
No, I self-produce. I hire some musicians for this, to come in and play some parts. I have a couple of bassists I like to work with. Certainly the violin player is a constant in my album since Cowboy Dreams, which is 3 or 4 albums back. So he's a constant. I have a harmonic player I like to work with. And the star of this new record, as far as I'm concerned, is the guy I just hooked up with, which is the pedal steel guy that plays on 2 songs.
That was a
whole new level of thing. I got to say this, man. I've always liked the pedal steel guitar. I had no idea how it worked until this guy came into the studio and explained it to me. And it is the most complicated thing in the world. He's actually using both his hands, both his legs to manage the pedals. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's a lot of moving parts, man.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I really, the sound, without delving into the lyrics, which is another layer of that musically, without trying to pigeonhole at all, it has this Buffalo Springfield 70s feel in the instrumentation. And I'm a sci-fi nut, and there's a series called Firefly that was kind of this space western, and I hear hints of the style of music that was in that series coming through on this project. So there's a lot of layers going on in it, additionally to the lyrics. And so you really did a good job with it. I hats off to you on that.
Thank you so much. It's a really interesting process for me, because on many levels it's a weird process, because For one thing, I think one of the call it the independent artist dilemma, is that when you're creating, in the process of creating something new, you have to disassociate yourself from the public, meaning you
right.
can't think about what people are going to like or not like. You can't be worried about it. You're just creating something.
Yeah.
But then at some point, when you start polishing it up and thinking of how to market it, you have to switch hats and think, okay, how do I make this appealing to as many people as
mm-hmm.
I possibly can?
Yeah.
And that's a very contradictory set of, you know, rules that you have to play by. But in the studio, as wearing both the producer's hat as well as the artist's hat, it's similar, because I on the one hand, I'm very attached to the songs that I hear. They're like children. If you ask me which is my favorite, I can never pick one, because they're all my favorites. I love them all. But as a producer, you have to look at these things objectively and decide, okay, this song needs to be number 3 or number 1 in the order, because it's a strong song, whatever. And I, to be honest, Greg, I don't do that just by myself. I have something I affectionately call the soundboard, and I pick 10 people. And it's always different people.
Okay. Cool.
And that are not musicians. They're just music fans. And I send them my draft master to and say, you know, what do you think about this? What do you think is the strongest song? What would you like to see a video of? And things like that. And I get that feedback. And that helps me make some smarter decisions down the line.
Are these songs, you mentioned order, of how they go on the record itself. Are they all isolated, or do they actually build on each other? Is it like a story form from song 1 to the end, or do they, you know, can you grab song 8 and grab song 4 and grab song 7 and not have them have to tie together?
I've done both in releases, and this particular one, it doesn't follow a storyline order per se. It's more of an aesthetic element. So I wanted to hit up front with something that moved. That's why I chose the song I chose. I wanted to be punchy and short. You know, I didn't want it to drag on too long.
Yeah.
And then I followed it by what I think is the eeriest song in the album, just to make a contrast. And then I get into what I think are the what I call the sellable hits, right? for 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
And then it goes from there.
Yeah.
But it's funny, man. I tell you, I'm often very surprised at how what the fans and the public think is the great material, and very often I end up with somebody that a lot of people really like song number 9 on the album or something like that. And I'm like, wow. And yeah. I know this, I would have moved that up front.
Yeah, yeah. So, given the state of the world with the pandemic and artists not being able to get out and share their music in the settings that we're used to, how does it look for you to promote this and be able to expose it to the fans?
That has been my biggest challenge in this one, because I had almost a formula when it came to releasing, you know, where I had my typical contacts that I send a record to. Of course, you're one of them. I had a record release party at a venue here. I have a deal with them that it's a free, because I want as many people to show up as
sure.
possible.
Yeah.
So I make it a free show. You know, and all of that kind of went belly up with this whole situation. Some of my contracts that I used to have are no longer this, you know, it's that bad, right?
I know, yeah. So
I've been looking into live streaming a show, but to be honest, Greg, I've seen live streaming done really well and really bad, and
yep.
I think I lack the technical chops to do it well, and I refuse to do a half-ass job.
Yeah,
that's,
I understand.
It's not something I'm willing to do.
Sure.
So I'm trying to see if I can partner with somebody that has a setup. I actually found some folks here, and really close to my home, actually, who do this for, you know, it's a venue that, because they're closed, they're doing live streaming shows. So they got to do
okay.
that.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Sure. So we're in talks and discussions now, and I'll get to that. So hopefully before the end of the year, there may be a live stream show that I can promote. But I'm hitting Facebook really hard. I'm sure people are finding me annoying as hell, because every day something comes out about the new album.
Okay.
I've revamped my website. I've created better online stores that give more access to information or easier to use, etc. So I'm trying to do it that way, trying to capitalize on the virtual world as much as possible.
Did you release them, the whole album together, or are you singles at a time? How are you getting them out in that fashion?
I actually release the album all at once, but what I do is I market songs individually.
Okay.
So when it comes to the marketing advertising process, I'll focus on a song for a couple of weeks, then I'll move on to the next one and go that route. And that's worked pretty well for me. I got the opportunity to meet the director of the Carnegie Hall in New York.
Oh, cool.
It was really cool. And it was a tour of the facility, and he noticed that I was a musician because of the questions I was asking. And he said, "Hey, if you want 5 minutes or one later, you know, just look me up after we're done." So I did. And one of the advice he gave me was, look, you know, in this day and age, I mean, sell your music, that's fine, but give it away. Just put your music absolutely everywhere you can put it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, don't focus so much on CDs. People are buying singles. People are focused on singles. So, you know, I get it if you want to make a CD, but market it as singles. So
right.
He's the one that planted that idea on my head, and I followed it.
Yeah.
And it's worked. It's worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like the fact that you did a collection of songs, more than just two or three. I, you know, as a as an older person in my 50s, an older listener, you know, I've enjoyed the different formats and mediums of music, and I think there's still an audience there that wants to hear more than your three best songs. You know, I think
right.
they like to kind of get that whole listening experience of song 1 to song 11, or you know, the full length long playing record, as the LP, you know, stood for. I'm glad that you did that.
Thank you. I'm my experience is the same as yours. I have some people that follow me, some fans that follow me, that I call them, that I tease them, and they're part of this generation, and they're more inclined to buy a single or whatever. But for the most part, the people that follow me are more interested in the whole experience, and they want a deeper story than just, you know, a catchy song. So it's just very interesting. I can't remember if we talked about this last time or not, but I've been blessed and cursed by being a musician's musician. So I have a lot of followers that are musicians, and a lot of people think that's a kiss of death. Because that means the public's not going to get it.
Yeah.
a lot of my musician friends definitely appreciate the fact that I do full albums. Or rather than singles.
Well, I think it gives the listener, I mean, I know we live in this age where it's microwave, fast food, you know, one and done kind of thing. I mean, even college sports, you know, get your freshman year in, get everybody to notice you and move on to the pros. And I think what happens, though, is if your pro year isn't a good year, you're done. People forget about you. You'll never talk about you again. And by doing a longer record like this, by giving people more, you know, maybe they don't like song 1, 2, and 3. And you know, like you said, it's song 9 that really gets their attention and it makes them want to hear the rest of the record. So, you know, it gives you a greater chance at having a listener find a favorite if you give them more to choose from.
For sure.
So the new record is Lucifer's Hand. If I've got this right, it came out October 31st, so it is available.
Yep.
What's the best way for people to reach you, listen to the record, maybe dig deeper into your catalog?
So I think the easiest way, because I spent so much time updating it, is to actually go to the website, banjobones.com. And it's got a store there. It's got a streaming app that you can just stream some music if you want to listen to it. And if it catches your attention and you want to buy it, there's links right there to buy the CD or the download. It's all in there, and it's very easy to use. So I made it extremely user-friendly.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks, Banjo. It's been good to catch up with you again. I appreciate you letting us help you with this new record, and certainly wish you well with it. We definitely really enjoy it.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, man. What you guys do is extremely important to us independent artists, and I really appreciate it, so thank you so much.
Hey, thank you for that, too, man. Have a great holiday. We're talking right before Thanksgiving, so we wish you well, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
All right, man. Cheers.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.